Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I am your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me, as ever, is Oriol Puigdemont. Yuri, welcome back.
Thank you.
I don't know why I say welcome. It's not as if...
Yeah, we've been talking 1,000 times in the last couple of days, but yeah, thank you anyway.
MotoGP is the main focus today, and it was, of course, the Spanish Grand Prix at Jerez, and Jack Miller is a MotoGP race winner again. And you have to say, Yuri, it was a very important victory for Jack because he's come in for a lot of criticism at the start of this season. Quite, I think, a lot of people said, it's been quite unfair, but I think it's been a justified criticism. He's not made the start to life as a factory Ducati rider, as is expected of a factory Ducati rider, but he made things right at Jerez.
Yeah, I think that's the main point. He was not performing as a factory Ducati factory rider expects to do. I mean, the expectations from Ducati when appointed him as a natural replacement for Andrea Dovizioso. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, he was underperforming, but maybe this victory, this win, can give him a boost and try to put him, and maybe we'll put him in another, I would say, mindset or approach for this mm-hmm. championship, because I think that he was carrying a heavy weight, and now maybe he can be more, let's say, relieved after that victory.
Yeah, I think the mindset thing is the correct sort of thing, because we know Jack's fast. There's never been any doubt about Jack's speed. We know he's a quick rider. We know he is a good rider, and when he puts things together, he is really good. But it was, you know, the problems in Qatar, the results were quite circumstantial. Portimao was indefensible. It was a silly mistake. But I think the biggest criticism for Miller for me was not so much his performances. It was more his approach. You know, you remember back to Qatar when people asked, you know, are you disappointed not to be on front row because, you know, that's what a Ducati's expected? And he said, well, you guys made that expectation, not me. I thought that was quite wrong. The way he handled the Joan Mir thing in Doha GP, that wasn't great either. It's the approach that's been wrong. And when you compare that to someone like Johan Zarco, to even Pecco Bagnaia, remember Bagnaia after Doha when he made a mistake, he said, look, I cannot make these mistakes as a factory Ducati rider. It's unacceptable, were his words. All the other Ducati riders seem to have had the better approach than Miller, but I think with this Jerez win and everything that's come off his shoulders, I think that will be a change.
Well,
I hope that's the big change.
I think what he said on that press conference was just a strategy to try to not put even more pressure on him. That's my point of view. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that it was just a strategy to try to not put even more pressure himself. So we have to wait with Jack. I think at this point, we have to wait what happens next. Because then one of his weaknesses during all his career has been the lack of consistency. So if he's a title contender, he needs to be more regular on the standings, on the races every Sunday. And that's what we're going to find out in the next, let's say, 2 or 3 races, because we spoke about that. And I think this year will be more, let's say, normal championship than last year, with not so many ups and downs. So I think that the consistency will be even more important this year than last year.
Yeah, and this next phase of the championship is quite a crucial one in that respect, because we're coming to tracks that are good for the Ducati, Le Mans. You know, Miller was quite there at Le Mans last year, but he had an engine issue, which was unfortunate. But, you know, we know the Ducati goes well at Mugello, it goes well at Barcelona. So these are races, I think, maybe not must win for Jack, but he needs to be up there at every single one of those races.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, it's not only a matter of winning, it's a matter of being there. It's a matter on step up on the podium. I mean, and not try to not leave the podium. So yeah, let's see what he's capable of doing.
But sticking with Jerez, I mean, we can't fault Jack's approach to that weekend, because it was different. He said that after the race. He said, from FP1, I just got my head down and was just doing laps on my own. And, you know, he had a few mechanical issues and sort of setup issues during sessions, which didn't help, but he kept calm through all of that. And then, you know, qualifying was decent. race. You know, the race looked like it was going to go Fabio Quartararo's way, but if you look at the average pace from when Fabio was quick before he had his problem, Jack was only about a tenth away in terms of average pace. So his race was quite good.
Yeah, it was quite good for being second. I mean, I think on normal conditions, without this arm problem, Fabio would have won, I mean, easy.
Yeah.
Easy.
For sure.
Easy. So, but don't get me wrong. I mean, even a second position, it would be really good for Jack. So, of course, the
a track not typically good for Ducati. Yeah. Well, it's okay for Ducati, but not an easy one.
I mean, and of course, the championship standings would look like very, very, very different than what they are doing now. But I mean, even a second position would have been really, really good for Jack.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, that's racing. Sometimes it happens and you have to take advantage of that. And I think there's been times where Jack hasn't taken advantage of situations in the past. So, you know, like we say, that his pace was good for second place, but he gave his lap times were very, very similar to Fabio's. It was just Fabio in clear air was just, whoa. You know, before that arm pump issue, Fabio looked like, you know, Fabio looked like Jorge Lorenzo at his best on the Yamaha. He was just comfortable, smooth, perfect.
Yeah, let's see how this problem affects him on the mental side, because I think yesterday he had one of those days that he will never forget in his life, because he was so over the others. I mean, he was so fast. He was unbeatable. I mean, and he was doing the perfect he was following the perfect script for this kind of Sunday, because he didn't put himself in a tricky position. He didn't do a really, really perfect start, but he was there, and then he was able to overtake the three guys that he had in front, same corner, last corner. And then when he was in front, he made a fastest lap time, and boom, he went away for a second. So it was the perfect race for him until those problems came up. So let's see how he's getting affected by this, slap, because I think it's one of those. I mean, it's a huge one.
Yeah, it's, you know, Jerez was a great circuit for Fabio last year, but you remember 2019, you know, he was on course for that first podium and the bike broke, so he has a bit of a love-hate relationship with the circuit. It was, he was devastated after the race. You could see it, you know, immediately in his reaction on the bike, but even in the press conference, the media debrief, he was just so
destroyed.
Down.
He was destroyed.
Like you said, it was unexpected, because he's never had arm pump at Jerez before, and he had a surgery on arm pump a couple of years ago, and the issue was more or less solved. He had a bit of an issue in Portimao last year, but, you know, I think this is what's annoyed him more, was that it's come out the blue, and it's come at such a perfect point for him on the Yamaha.
Yeah, it was a huge shame. And you know what? The thing that I like the most from Fabio, apart from the sporting side, the riding skills and so, it's that he's so direct and he's so clear. Mm. So yesterday he was completely devastated, and he was not trying to hide that he was devastated. He admitted, now I'm lost. I don't even want to think about it, because I have a lot of people telling me different things to go in so many different directions. So, and I don't want to make a mistake. So, but that's what I love from this guy, or from this kind of athletes or sportsmen, that they are still able to show that they are humans. So, I felt really, really, really bad for him yesterday.
You're right about Fabio. He did try and take positives. He said, look, I'm going to just, the first 13 laps where I was quick, I'm just going to take that and move on, which I guess is the right approach when you consider last year. He said this a couple of rounds ago. He said the problem with a lot of last year was that every race he was just too negative. He wasn't seeing the positives, and he kept coming into it negative, and he was just negative the whole time. So that how he approached after that, by saying, I'm going to take the speed from the 13 laps and just focus on that, it sort of kind of shows that kind of mental, well, you know, that mental change he's made and the work with the psychologist he's done over the winter.
Yeah,
and,
but in that case, I think there's another story. I mean, he needs to fix this problem. End of the story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a matter of mentality. It's not a matter of, well, from the second, I mean, from the, yeah, from the lab 14, lab 15, he got, let's say, a cleft or a physical. No, no. It is that there is a physical problem there and he needs to get it fixed. End of the story. So yeah. I think in a way it can be more easy for him to deal with this kind of problem, or that rather than, you know, if that problem would be mental or something like that.
Yeah.
I think it's just a physical thing that he needs to fix, that, and then he can turn over.
Yeah, for sure. But what I'm saying is, the Fabio of last year might not have had, you know, he took this well, given how obviously shit a situation it was, if you get what I mean. He was,
yeah,
you know, he, like you say, he was, well, direct, but he was still taking,
yeah, but he was completely positive, so. I mean, smashed yesterday,
yeah,
which is fair, completely normal. I mean,
yeah, because he did half the race with an arm it wasn't working. It's a big shame. I guess part of Fabio's frustration, at the back of his mind, he must sort of be thinking, because this was a perfect opportunity and he knows how temperamental Yamahas can be. So I guess at the back of his mind, he maybe thought, oh, you know, this was a lot of points that went missing because we could go to the next race and Yamaha might not work. We saw that with Maverick at Portimao. You know, I guess that might be at the back of his mind, because that has been the Yamaha way for
that's what I was trying to say, and that's what I meant when I say that it's only, and I would say only, because it's important, but it's something that can be fixed by, you know, by the doctors. So it's not something that he can work with or work on. It's something that needs to be done, not by him, by the doctors.
I hope not by him.
So in my opinion, maybe this makes the recovery a bit easier.
Yeah, for sure. It's obviously the main thing for him is, if he is going to go surgery, is the timing of it. Jack Miller had surgery after Doha, but that made sure he was fit for Portimao. So it wouldn't be a massive thing for him. But I guess obviously from Fabio's point of view, he'll need the surgery, but he also wants to be fit enough for his home Grand Prix, because that will be a perfect opportunity for him to win. We know the Yamaha is great there, and he will want to win at Le Mans.
Yeah, but let's see what's the next step, because I mean, we have race in 2 weeks' time, and we've seen Jack Miller, I mean, being more or less ready for the race in 2 weeks' time after he got the surgery. After the second race in Qatar, if I'm not wrong. And he was, let's say, ready for Portimao before the crash.
I
think that there's something that Fabio needs to have in mind before taking any decision. I think he will probably go to Barcelona, and then he will get the advices from the doctors, and then he will decide.
Sticking with the Yamaha theme, Franco Morbidelli third. Again, a little bit lucky with Fabio dropping out, but Franco's ride all weekend was great, just as it was in Portimao. I think we're seeing the best of Frankie as a rider, because he's getting the absolute best out of a two-year-old bike now, and he's not really hiding his displeasure at that fact anymore. He said in the press conference that he spoke to Yamaha and he was direct about his feelings, and Yamaha just said he was unlucky, which is fair enough, but you know, you can understand Frankie's frustrations at the situation, because he's doing great things on a really old bike.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, when the things go right, when the things go well, it's very easy to say, no, I'm happy with the bike, I'm happy with the team. So, I mean, before the season starts. But
yeah,
when he has these difficult two races in Qatar, the perspective, the approach changed. And then you are not that happy. So that's what happened in my from my point of view. Now that he had a really good race, now the perspective changes again, which is normal. But I think it's good to get this interpretation. And then, we all can suspect that he will have a factory bike next year. And let's see.
Well, you hope.
Yeah.
It's Morbidelli has been, he was unlucky. Yamaha are right. He was unlucky in the circumstance of last year when the deal was signed. You know, he hadn't really come into that sort of form that would take him to almost winning the championship. So from that perspective, you could understand Yamaha's decision. At the same point, you kind of think Yamaha maybe needs to, if they want to keep Frankie happy, is maybe give him some sort of guarantee that for next year, if SRT is a Yamaha satellite, that he will have a factory bike, because there's similarities between Franco's situation right now and what happened with Zarco in 2018 when he didn't get any sort of factory support and then wasn't really happy about that. And then Yamaha had tried to backtrack on that in 2019 or for 2020 when he was, for
2019,
when he was speaking with KTM and Honda. So there are similarities, but it would just be interesting to see how Frankie approaches this, because he's a different character to most on the grid.
Yeah, I think that the key factor in this equation will be, is the deal between SRT and Yamaha done, signed already? Because as far as I know, they are really quiet on that. I mean, SRT is really quiet. I mean, nobody from Dean has knocked any other manufacturer's doors, any door from any other of the manufacturers. So that makes me think that the deal is really ready to be signed or signed already. So in that case, I think that it's completely fair to say that Franco will have a factory bike next year, otherwise Yamaha is even more crazy. And let's see who his teammate would be.
You have to think, looking at the results of Frankie this year so far and the results of Valentino, if Yamaha didn't give Franco a factory bike next year, it would just be, you know, I don't know how they could justify that, because, you know, Rossi was 17th in Jerez again, you know, a circuit he was on the podium at last year, and he's not getting any better. He's not finding a way through these troubles. He doesn't know how to fix a bike, and there can be much more they can do to the bike, because if you look at Fabio's performances, you know, Maverick's still quite hard to tell, but he seemed he was fine with the bike. He just didn't have good braking in Jerez. But it's hard to justify how the current situation with Rossi and Yamaha can continue when they've got a great rider and Franco who needs a factory bike.
Yeah, and again, I think that the main thing is that we haven't seen Rossi enjoying for a few months now. So
yeah, and it's sad to watch. Yeah, of course. Know, you mentioned it the other day. His media debriefs are quite tough because it's the same stuff he's saying. He's, you know, races work great. You know, we need to work. We're good, but not good enough. And, you know, the guy's a legend. He shouldn't be saying things like that. You know, it's just not. This was a situation that was potentially going to happen if he continued his career. That's always the risk. But it really did look like, with all the changes he made to the team and such, that this would be a better year.
Yeah, but nope.
So, yeah,
what else can I say?
I think just to finish up there, I think what's interesting about Rossi is his troubles kind of highlight just how close MotoGP is, because he's sort of like 7/10, 8/10 off in qualifying, which 3 or 4 years ago he would have been easily inside the top 10.
Of course.
Now you're,
of course.
Nowhere.
No, I mean, of course it shows that how close the MotoGP grid is, but I mean, in a MotoGP, like in Formula One, like in any racing category, you are racing against the others.
Yeah.
So if between you and the first, there are 15, 17, 16 other riders or drivers, So what's the point?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you are 18 or 19 or 20.
Yeah. It's interesting because whenever Rossi does something good, everyone seems to just, you know, I told you so, he's brilliant. Like, remember Qatar qualifying when he was fourth? Everyone was like, oh, I told you he's still fast. You have to think of if the situation was a few years ago where things weren't as competitive and he was still finishing like sixth and seventh, people would probably go, ah, that's fine. But in the context of this year, you know, well, to have performances from sixth and seventh from a few years ago, it just wouldn't cut it.
In the end, I put it down and I say, listen, of course, this guy has won the right to decide when he's going to retire, 100%. He's a legend. Mm. He always will. And end of story. But I think even for him, it's a difficult situation at the moment to deal with.
Yeah.
So as he repeats in every media debrief, he's not enjoying. And you can feel that. You can see that. So if he wants to stay here, he can stay here forever because he has won the right to decide.
Yeah.
But it's just that it's hard for us to see him struggle and to suffer.
Yeah. I don't want to go to a Rossi debrief. And I mean, no disrespect to Iker Lecuona, but I don't want to hear Rossi saying, oh, I tried to pass Iker Lecuona and made a mistake. Come on, Valentino, you shouldn't be trying to pass for 15th place. You should be up, you know.
Yeah, but this is what it is at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. Another rider didn't sound too happy after Jerez was Paul Espargaro. You know, listening to his comments, I understand he was a bit spicier and a bit more direct in Spanish, but in English he sort of suggested he wasn't very happy with the test plan that Honda has for the Monday. He said, I'm an employee of Honda and I will test whatever they tell me, which he did. That to me sort of suggests that he has an idea and they're not really agreeing with that. But he also said that there's too many different packages for Honda right now and they're not working as a group.
Well,
which is interesting.
Yeah, but I think at the moment, to try to understand the situation, it's the best thing that we can do is try to analyze the difficulties that Paul has faced. And don't forget that Honda is one of the most interested parts on him to go fast.
Yeah, for sure.
But at the same time, Honda is not the easiest bike and the easiest factory in terms of communication, in terms of many, many things. So I understand that after bad results and after another bad result, he can start to be a bit frustrated or his confidence going down. And the expectations were really high at the beginning of the season, and especially after the pre-season tests. But now he's facing some problems. So I think it's just the result of these bad results, and than Honda is not an easy bike and factory to work with.
Mm-hmm. And Mark sort of touched on the problem that Honda had. You know, he has quite a different view to what Paul said. You know, that Honda is working and Honda needs to work, but what Honda can't lose is the feeling from the rider, which is fair enough, because if you look at the past, you know, the Honda's been difficult, but Mark's been able to have a good enough feeling on the bike to get the maximum out of it.
Well, but he's been away. He's been away for a year. Bike was, I mean, and Honda has been developing the bike without him, without his input.
And it looked a bit better last year as well. Towards the end of the season, you look at, you know, Alex was more comfortable. Alex Marquez, you know, Taka was on a slightly different bike, but was comfortable.
Yes, but it's interesting. For example, the crash that we've seen from Mark Saturday morning was, in my opinion, was unusual to see for him.
Yeah, for sure.
For him.
Well, for him especially, yeah.
Yeah. So I think something has happened in that bike and they will have to fix it, and they will have to fix it fast.
Mark said on Sunday that he noticed that the kind of weak point of this Honda is mid-corner to exit it's where it seems to really struggle. But it, you know, it looks like he's having problems on the front end, which is not unusual given that he's been away for so long and he's still trying to find that feeling again. Taka went to a slightly older chassis to find rear grip. He was happy with that, but he did say the 2021 chassis is better in handling in general. So that's confusing because he says it's quite good, but Mark says, well, mid corner it's not so good.
I think at the moment they will need Mark to be 100% recovered from the injury, and then wait for his comments on the full package.
Yeah, for sure. Just on Mark, ninth, solid enough. You know, he said he was destroyed after the race because he really hurt himself in that Saturday crash. He really knocked himself about and slightly worryingly had slight memory problem briefly initially after the crash, which has raised a couple of questions. But I mean, just a lot of riders were expecting Mark to be a bit further up, but this weekend sort of showed that this recovery, it's going to take a little bit longer than you'd probably hope.
Yeah, and probably because the feedback that he has from the bike is not the best.
Yeah.
So it also affects to his confidence. So I think, he's in a difficult times.
But, you know, it's Mark. He could go to Le Mans and be quick the whole time. you never know. Bagnaia leading the championship. A lot of people have been really impressed with Pecco this season, the way he's gone about his business. He's got quite a big fan in Ben Spies on social media. You know, it's good to see Pecco leading the championship, but he was quite grounded about it. He said, look, if I start to think about it, I'll end up going slow. So he's kind of learning from all the problems he had last year in terms of, you know, consistency and crashing and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he's a very talented guy and think he's very intelligent. And he has made a few mistakes I wouldn't say mistakes, but it was not an easy first year in MotoGP. Mm-hmm. But then he learned a lot from that. He gained more experience and now he has become a really, really, really balanced rider. Mm. And I think at this point, he only is missing the victory.
And you have to think in the next few rounds is a very, very good chance of that ending because he's in really great form.
But you know what is good? I think what the title that Mir won last year has changed the approach of the riders in terms of, is it possible to win the title without winning 10 races or 8 races? Yeah. Because this is with that close level that we have at the moment, this is the direction we're going to. So in the end, the key factor is try to be in the podium or around the podium most of the races you can. So I think that's the right approach, and the approach that Pecco will have from now on.
Yeah, he's the only rider to have 3 podiums from the first 4 races, so he's certainly got that consistency thing down. Just finally, on the most kind of noteworthy thing from that race was Aprilia, because I actually, you know, your favorite manufacturer, but you know, when we talk about Aprilia, it seems to be we're quite disappointed. But I think in a positive way, there was quite a bit of disappointment because Aleix was quick the whole weekend, and his used tire pace really did suggest hint that they could have been a really, really, really good weekend.
Yeah, but it
turned out, six, 5 seconds is fine.
But we cannot put that pressure on Aprilia's shoulders at the moment. I think they are doing really good. Of course, we all want them to be even more on top. But I'm just hoping that Aleix can be there more often, you know, and race after race after race. And then they will have to do another step, which put them more closer to the podium. But I think that sooner or later, if they keep working this hard and Aleix is racing that good, I think he will get it.
Well, you look at, he Elias said at the weekend, you know, he's both he and the bike are consistent. You look at the results this year. You know, last year they didn't have a top six. They only, before this year, they only ever had five top six finishes ever in MotoGP. They've now had two in a row. You know, Elias was 5 seconds off the pace. We're going to a circuit, Le Mans, which should suit the Aprilia because acceleration is needed, which the Aprilia is good at. He's really happy with that. The bike should be agile there.
Yeah.
You know, he's there are a lot of good opportunities. And like you say, they will need to make that final step, but it just seems like everything is falling into place a lot better. Yeah. Whatever happens in a race, Aprilia always seems to be competitive, and that's we've never seen that before.
Yeah, so that's why I think that there are a lot of positives on this moment, and as let's say, he's enjoying more than ever and living the dream, even on the bike and even at home. So he's a happy guy. He was also saying that he was thinking on keep racing. So after this contract, that I think it expires next year, at the end of next year. Yeah. So at the beginning he said, well, I'm not going to last a lot here in MotoGP, but now, because he's enjoying a lot, he's rethinking.
Yeah, he's put the work in as well. There's just a few that have worked harder over the past few years in LA. I think we'll end it on there, Yuri. Thank you very much for your company.
Thank you.
I know it's been another long weekend with you and your dodgy time zones.
Not for long.
Well, that's coming home soon, and that'll be good. It means we can podcast at more normal times.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time, Yuri. And thank you to the listeners for your company, as always. Again, you can go and listen to everything at your usual podcast places. And you can read everything on Autosport and motorsport.com. We've got a lot from the weekend to keep you entertained. We'll be back soon to discuss more MotoGP. But until then, it's a very warm goodbye, and keep looking after yourselves.